Welcome back to Celestia on Air, Deciphering STEM, the podcast of SET Celestia, the Astronomy, Astrophysics, and Space Tech Club of Pensacola. We are your hosts. I am Yashi.
And I'm Aishna. And happy Pride Month, everyone.
Happy Pride Month.
Yay. This is the Pride special episode of our podcast, and we hope that we are able to take you on an insightful journey with us today. And we have Alyssa Adams back with us.
Hello.
They are a postdoc research fellow at University of Wisconsin-Madison. And we have invited them to share their journey of self-discovery and how studying science helped them to accept themselves, their identity, their orientation, everything.
Right. Hi, Alyssa.
Hi.
Welcome back to SET Celestia. You gave a lecture a month ago, I think, and we all loved your lecture. And I'm really excited to have you here on our podcast today.
Ooh, that's so great. Woohoo!
Okay, starting off, so this is Pride Month, which is why we have the podcast episode right now. How has Pride Month been for you? Did you do anything special to celebrate?
Actually, so, you know, with the pandemic, things aren't fully geared up. I was hoping for a really big parade, but this is a special Pride Month for me because it's my first Pride Month where I'm actually fully out. So it's special in my heart. But so we haven't had any formal plans or anything like that. But we did celebrate quite often by making some favorite food at home and, you know, taking some extra time off and, you know, just having a nice time. It's been a really, really special Pride Month.
That sounds amazing. I mean, despite the pandemic, it's nice to celebrate something about this. Would you mind sharing with our audience your gender identity or sexual orientation?
Sure. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Yeah. So I am non-binary, and I am also pansexual. But most of the time, I say bisexual, just because, I'm attracted to people regardless of their gender. But so that's the whole thing. But I say pansexual, and they're like, "What? What is that?" And so I just most of the time I say bisexual. But
I think so.
Woohoo!
Yay!
Yay! Okay. So exciting.
Right, so we read your blog and you're a huge fan, and we observed that you were very vocal about your experience with Orthodox religion. So since this is a Pride special, we wanted to know how these beliefs influence your journey of self-discovery and your realization about being part of the queer community. So could you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think that it was such a long journey because growing up, it was extremely difficult. I was always in an environment that was very anti-LGBTQ. So it was I didn't really understand what was going on in myself. And there was never a opportunity to discuss or to learn about those aspects of myself. Just because from basically day one from growing up, it was very homosexuality is evil and, it's really bad and it's such a sin and, don't do that. And it was really, really difficult for me growing up. So, it was a really rocky start and it took me a really, really long time to accept myself as who I am without having to conform to somebody else's expectations about who I should be. It was a really, really long journey. And it took me just up until this last year to fully accept myself and my identity. So yeah, it was quite a long journey. It was 29 years, I think, 30 years.
It's really hard to come into your own when, unlearning these beliefs.
So you've also been a part of the scientific community while you were going a lot of through the journey. And you've been part of the scientific community for a long time. So how has that affected and how has that been a part of your life through this journey? It has been hard, but how has the scientific community either helped or disbarred you from getting to that conclusion?
Yeah. So it basically in two parts. I mean, the first part was, the philosophy of, understanding what, how do I understand reality and how is objective, what you would say an objective measurable reality relating to the reality of that I understand as how the world works. So that was one way that it helped me, you know, thinking, you know, after learning about physics and the cosmos and how vast it is, it really made me feel that, you know, not only am I small and not only are, you know, people finite, but that also opened up a huge, like, burden for my shoulders, because I knew that, you know, whatever I felt about, like, you know, how I was and how I expressed myself, you know, it wasn't going to send me to, like, the depths of hell, or some sort of, like, cataclysmic event wasn't going to happen because of it, which was, like, a huge relief. But also, like, the other part was the scientific community, especially in astrobiology, was so friendly. They are extremely, like, LGBTQ inclusive and very supportive. There's a lot of members of the LGBTQ community in there, which was like really great, because growing up, I didn't have a whole lot of chance to interact with other members from the community. Like a few, but, you know, in grad school, it really opened my eyes to, you know, what life is for other people and what life could be for me as well. So yeah, I really felt like I was at home with science, not just with the way that I thought of the world, but with the community that came with it as well. So hooray for science. It's so nice.
Hooray for science. Also, like, I think something that isn't talked a lot about, maybe in mainstream media, but is like a big thing, like in STEM fields, a lot of the, what do you think about the inclusivity in the STEM fields from the top down and from the authority positions that exist today, and how hard it is to, for the community itself to encroach into the STEM field from your perspective?
Yeah, I think it can be really tricky. It's like especially coming from a physics background, physics is very notoriously, like, not very inclusive. And, you know, it's very much like a white male culture. It's sort of like like an exclusive club where, you know, you have these born geniuses and they're all, like, you know, oh, so smart, so above everything else. And I think a lot of that is, like, perpetuated by, like, you know, cultural, I don't know, Hollywood stereotypes that people put, but, you know, that culture was really difficult for me to navigate. And you see it a lot in different fields as well, not just physics. You know, there's like, each field has its own issues with diversity. You know, biology has an issue with, like, racial diversity. Most fields have issues with gender diversity. So, you know, it can be, like, quite disappointing, especially coming in from, you know, like, it brand new into the field and you're just learning about it. It can be really difficult. But what I did find is, like, there's two things. The first thing is that it is improving, even if it is, like, like, glacially slow in terms of, like, improvement. Mm-hmm. It is going in a positive direction, even if it's not fast as I want to see it. But also, you know, I learned to carve out pieces of science for myself, not necessarily worrying about, like, a hierarchy or fitting in. You know, I try to do things and put myself in spaces where I feel most comfortable. So if I'm in a space or in a lab that's just, like, extremely sexist and exclusionist and, you know, is just really about, like, nope, we only want to have, like, these particular, I avoid it, like, the plague, right? And, you know, I encourage everybody else in this, you know, in who feel uncomfortable with that to avoid it as well. But, you know, sometimes it's difficult because it's not possible to avoid situations, you know, like that. So my heart goes out to people who, you know, who are really struggling with it. And yeah, it's definitely a tough situation, but, you know, hopefully, I think in 50 years, you know, the 50 year time scale, we can look back and be like, whew, don't have to deal with that again. So fingers crossed for the future.
Crossed for the future. Before we go forward, you talked about the improvements in the STEM community that is happening right now. What do you think, like, is happening, or what more could happen in the future for this kind of inclusive, like, increase in inclusivity?
I think people are starting to be aware of that it is a problem in the first place. Like, one of the things I noticed in the physics field was that a lot of people weren't even aware that diversity was an issue, and they weren't even aware that like, the behaviors that they were doing were contributing to a sort of culture that was very exclusive and kept, you know, underrepresented groups or other just people. I mean, just like generally just people out. So I think I think that people are becoming aware that that is an issue. And I still do see a lot of, you know, not as much, but, you know, within like 5 years ago, there was still a lot of pushback, like, oh, we don't have a problem in this field. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I've never seen a problem before. So people are actually turning around and being like, oh, okay. You know, especially with like this last year, a lot of these issues were talked about, you know, with like the George Floyd things. And I think a lot of people were really, really starting to be in like, think and reflect about how their actions and behaviors are affecting, you know, other people's lives, especially in established institutions. So, I think that people are finally starting to understand that it really is an issue. And I think that's one of the biggest first steps. But, you know, like people are starting to figure out, like, how do we address it, right? And I think some people are doing, you know, even if they mean well, they may not be actually addressing the issue, but at least they're starting to try and people are starting to educate themselves about it, which is really positive.
That sounds great. I wanted to ask you, have you seen like more safe spaces come up in the community, especially ones that have been like officially recognized as like, you know, like people in science, if they're feeling discriminated against, you can come here and yeah, we're all an inclusive community. So do you see safe spaces like that coming up now?
Yeah, I do. And I think they're not, I mean, they're like of facilitated by people who are, you know, mentors in the community. And I see a lot of people being more vocal about, hey, no, like I'm a lab PI and I want to make sure that everybody feels welcome. You know, like, so like the PI that I'm working with right now, he's super good at it. You know, I've seen a lot of other PIs. They're really, really good at it. And a lot of them are starting to become really vocal. So I do see a lot of increase in like very explicit saying that, you know, no matter who you are, who your identity is and what your background is, you are welcome to be here and just as you are. Which really, really, really helpful.
Yeah. It's a positive change. Oh, also, there's this question that just came up. What do you think about programs that offer like that benefit minorities, like over? Because I see a lot of backlash from certain groups about how these are unfair to those to like the cishet community or something like that. So it's like, oh, why would you favor like or the queers say or women or something like that? So how do you think these programs help increase diversity and ultimately help make the STEM community a better place?
I think they're really great because they're addressing like a very targeted issue, you know, like, oh, we want to make sure that, you know, this group of people feels welcome and feels like they're supported. And I think it's absolutely fantastic and absolutely needed because a lot of those, a lot of those mechanisms are already set up for people who, you know, have privilege for whatever part of their identity. And just like to have systems that are set up to give other people like that same access and that those like same lowering of those barriers is an absolutely critical and needed thing. And I think it's absolutely fantastic. And so I'm all about those programs. And I think that, you know, that you see a lot of backlash because I'm not sure if like the backlash is coming from the sense that, oh, they like the people don't really understand like the actual like problem that is at hand. I'm not sure if it like comes from that or if like they actually see like the data and they're like, oh, no, that's not a problem. But you know, I haven't really seen any evidence so far of like the latter. So I honestly think it's still coming from like people don't actually realize that, you know, how bad of a problem it is and how exclusive that certain institutions can be to particular groups. So, I totally support those programs. I think they're fantastic.
So about this, like, I think a lot of the backlash comes from people who feel that your identity is being favored over merit, you know, so they feel like people who don't deserve it as much as them are getting a place in the community, which is, I think, where a lot of the hate comes from, you know, like, or you'd be seen as a less talented person if you came through a diversity program. So I feel like there's a lot of problem there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's definitely, yeah, it's definitely an issue. And I've heard that a lot from people. And I think it can be really difficult, because because it's not like, I haven't seen any program that's like, oh, we're going to throw merit away. You know, like I've never even seen that before. So I'm always like, what? It's not about like, oh, we're throwing merit away and we're only focusing on identities, because that would also be like a really weird program to do.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that as the case. And I also think that, you know, people who are coming from like that sort of perspective might also not be aware of the sort of privileges that their own identity brings with them. So, you know, like, why did you get into this lab? And I think that, you know, in a lot of cases, some people don't realize that it's like, oh, my privilege really like was a huge playing factor. Like my whiteness was a huge playing factor into getting in this lab. And that has nothing to do with merit. So, I think it's sort of like, people not understanding exactly like what their privilege buys them, and, you know, what would life look like if they didn't have that privilege? I think that's something that, I guess a lot of people like haven't thought of, and I understand, like, it's difficult. Like if you've never like actually thought about it and you don't understand like why should I care about this? Like my life wouldn't be any different, you know, 'cause you didn't have like a chance to do it. Then, you know, I can understand never thinking about it, but I think like the more conversations we have about it and the more opportunities we have to point it out, I think is really helpful.
I think like, because like, this episode is very focused on the experience of the community. Do you have any specific anecdotes that you have heard about from your friends or something, or from people in the community that you have seen, both from STEM and queer community, like the intersectionality of it? Do you know about any stories where they were discriminated, or there have been any other problems that they faced throughout this journey?
Yeah, I've heard of, a few horror stories, and, you know, nothing that like sticks out. Like the biggest story that sticks out to me was, I knew somebody who was in the middle of transitioning, transitioning their gender or their gender expression. And, what they were struggling with was the community, like there was a lot of like bullying in their social group. And what she had found was that a lot of people that were supposedly her friend ended up not being her friend, and they bullied her and her wife, girlfriend at the time, incessantly. And they had to, they ended up switching universities and going somewhere else because of it. But, you know, I know that like it can be extremely, like it was extremely, extremely brutal for them, socially, you know, like within their friend group. And, you know, I I've heard like lots of stories like that, where somebody like comes out and, starts to make changes in their life to make themselves feel more comfortable about who they are and how they express themselves. And, you know, not everybody like in their friend group can take kindly to that, you know. And then I've also heard like, a lot of horror stories about, people who would join a lab and, you know, it's always in the back of your head, like, you know, are they going to, you know, do they not like me because I'm gay? You know, do they not like me because, you know, whatever. And, being treated unfairly and people being, you know, really concerned about like, you know, is it because I'm gay or, you know, things like that. So it can be fairly tough, but, you know, also like my experience is extremely limited because I tend to just like stay in like the astrobiology community and the biology community. And, you know, they're very friendly and inclusive. But yeah, I have heard a lot of horror stories before. So it's sad. It's just terrible, you know, and a lot of it is like also not just from like friends, but also from family as well. You know, a lot of people being disowned, a lot of people being homeless because of it, if they're younger and they can't support themselves financially. So
it's like very sad to see that's still prevailing. And hopefully 50 years from now, fingers crossed. Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
There's also this thing. You have worked, I think your PhD dissertation was on open-ended evolution, and you've worked a lot in the evolutionary biology field throughout your career. So I think, like, kind of lighthearted question from the whole grave discussion that we had right now, but what do you think, like, what new stuff did you realize, what long-held belief did you kind of debunk when you started reading evolutionary biology? How did that kind of change you, and like, what kind of new beliefs that you gained from this field in the context of the queer community and also in general?
Yeah. The only prejudice that was debunked because you started reading the science of it. So I think it was that.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that really opened my eyes was how scientists understand sex and gender. So, you know, I don't know anything about, like, you know, like, I have very little background in terms of, like, heredity and, you know, genes and, you know, all that kind of stuff, like cell biology and developmental biology. But I started reading a bunch of research on how you know, how homosexuality is found in other species, which I thought was really fascinating, like penguins, you know, like gay penguins are so cute. And I was just like, I was blown away when I saw it and was started reading about, like, you know, not just in penguins, but in other species as well. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Cause, you know, I always think, like, humans are just really weird animals. Right. And it was really cool to see that, like, other animals are you know, also have homosexual tendencies as well. And I also saw that, you know, like, we don't understand gender and, like, sex expression very much. So, like, you know, there's this whole debate on, like, you know, is, like, the whole thinking about gender or sex, like, in terms of, like, XY chromosomes, like, what, you know, is that, like, a correct thing to do? And, you know, there's a lot of interesting science that says it's a very, very fuzzy sort of boundary that's not particularly understood. Which I thought was really cool too. And I thought, I was like, wow, that's so interesting. Especially like with human development, you know, I was like really curious about, like, you know, what exactly causes a fetus to develop, like, you know, like a penis or a vagina, for example. And, you know, looking at like the developmental similarities and, you know, what are the mechanisms that cause you to get development for one or the other or something in between. And like, those are really fascinating too. And it's something that was like very, a lot more like fluid, I guess, and like a lot more related. And it really made me realize that, like, oh, you know, you have like female sex and you have like male sex, and they're not super different from each other, which I thought was that, like, that also really blew my mind. And that was really cool. Yeah, and then I think the last thing that that science really made me like just super fascinated about was, you know, more philosophically, I like to go back to this idea of, like, you know, life is very finite. Because, like, growing up, I, you know, was very ingrained in the sense of, like, you know, every human soul is permanent and fixed, and it's like a permanent fixture for the universe, like, for the universe. But I'm, you know, I realized that that was not the case. And, you know, as I'm living, I'm more of a process that will die someday. But what happened to me when I realized that was like, oh, so that just means I can do whatever I want. So I can, like, live the life that I've always wanted to live, and it doesn't matter in the end. So that was a really huge thing for me to really sink in and to realize that, oh yeah, I really can do anything, and I really can be like the person I've always wanted to be, and there's no limits, and there's no reason not to be, because, you know, life is short. So yeah, all kinds of interesting things.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that you know, like, a lot of people have this argument that you know, being gay is unnatural, being non-binary is unnatural or something, and then it's like, it's all over the place in nature. So, like, what are you on about, you know?
Yeah, totally. It's so odd to think that, like, humans are, you know, we're not animals for some reason. Yeah. And so therefore, like, biology doesn't apply to us. It's like, what? Who came up with that idea?
Yeah. We had a fun question for you. We know you're really into League of Legends, right? Because you talked about that in your lecture when you came for the Celestia lecture before this. So Riot Games recently made Leona and Donna an official couple. So what do you think about that?
I honestly had, like, I thought it was in the lore and I totally missed it. And I was like, what? How did I miss that? Normally I know everything about League of Legends. And then I was like really confused. And then I thought they were sisters too. And I was like, I don't know what's going on. But then I like read into it. I was like, oh, okay, gotcha. And I think it's adorable. Uh-huh. I think it was really cute that they made them a couple. So I was like, all right. And they have like these little emotes that in the game, and they have like pride emotes, they have pride flags, and I was like all decked out. I decked out my character and my profile and stuff. So I actually really loved their pride pride event this year. I think they did a really, really fun job. So yay.
Uh-huh. Were you like surprised by this announcement? And like, oh, I did not see that coming. Or was it like a situation where everybody already suspected that they were a couple, and like that just made it official?
I mean, since they're not really like, they're not Teemo, so I don't pay too much attention to them, because I love Teemo the most. So I didn't know, like, you know, it actually like surprised me, because I was like, I just thought I missed something. But I don't know, like, if people like expected them to be together or not. I hadn't heard anything. So to me, it was a total surprise, but also, like, you know, they're not Teemo, so I didn't pay that much attention.
For anybody who's unaware of the League of Legends, it's a game, and like, Teemo is one of the characters that Alyssa likes a lot, and they're geeked out in our lectures a lot of times.
I totally like, I make all my like icons like little Teemo icons for
exactly.
If I'm not wrong, there's like other queer couples and stuff in League of Legends, right? Like, I'm not super into the game. I think Abdul was really geeking out on us that day and he was talking about this. So there's like representation.
I was telling them about Paris and how his story is about these two, about these two gay lovers, and how Paris possessed both of them together. So three people inside one body, and that is how he was stupid. And even I geeked out completely while we were talking about it.
Yeah, I love their, so like they had Tarik was their sort of like, I guess their first openly gay character, I think. I'm not sure, but everybody thought like in the community that he was gay anyway. Just because like he's so fabulous. Like he's got all of his gems. Yeah, he's just so fabulous. And so I was so glad that when they made him officially gay, I was like, yes, 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 perfect. And then they made Vayne and Kesa lesbians. And I was really excited about that because I thought they were very cute. And who else? I know there's more. There's definitely one more couple. Oh, I can't think of it. I thought of it before, but anyway. Yeah, Tark's one of my favorite characters too. He's so much fun.
It's nice to see inclusive games like that.
Yeah,
I think that's not new to them. You know, it's not just like a, it's Pride Month. Let's quickly make something canonically gay. Let's go.
Yeah.
I think it's problematic sometimes. Yeah.
While also researching for this podcast, we say researching mostly stalking your Twitter ID. We saw your cats and we loved them, and your ferrets and we loved them. Okay, just talk about your pets for a while. We're just like,
yes.
Oh,
have a nice geeking out session for that.
I could go on and on about my pets forever. So let's see. We have two cats and three ferrets and a turtle and a betta fish and a little guppy. And of course you can't forget all of the spiders out in the balcony. You know, they're part of the home too. we've got two cats, and they're both very special to us. They're about 9 years old each, and Mr. Jim is I got him as an undergrad, and he's followed me around everywhere ever since. And for my partner, Joe, he's got a, like his cat is a similar situation, but he got Callie in grad school. That's her name. Mm-hmm. And so they like each other a little. It's mostly Mr. Jim loves Callie. He always wants to play with her and he's always like poking at her. But Callie is like, I don't want to play with you. You're too much. I hate you. So, so that's sort of like their dynamics is Mr. Jim stalking Callie and trying to pick on her and Callie being like, go away. I hate you. So,
yeah, Mr. Yeah. Jim is a really cute name. I just wanted to put it out there because honestly, like,
yeah, he's actually named after Captain James Kirk. And it's funny, I didn't actually name him. I had a former roommate name him, and he said, that way we can go, damn it, Jim, you're a cat, not a doctor.
Oh my God.
Oh, that is beautiful. Did you ever do that? Did you ever get the chance to do it?
Yes. He's obviously done that.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah, okay.
I say, like, damn it, Jim. You're a cat.
Identity theft is not a joke.
Have you named the spiders?
No, they're innumerable. I mean, I would name them by number, but they're all also indistinguishable as well. So there's just, I mean, we have like, so we're 13 floors up on a tower, and for whatever reason, it's just a spider colony like place. I don't know. Like, we just have tons of spiders. It's like a spider infestation. It's crazy. But
is this how God meant it to be? They're there because, like, yeah.
I have no idea why they're all up here. It's terrible. But, you know, at least it's not, at least they catch all the flies on all the mosquitoes, question mark.
That is, yeah, that is legitimate. That's a legitimate reason to keep spiders around.
Yeah.
Sort of an ending point. Like, for the Pride Month special episode, do you have any advice for queer folks who are aspiring to work in the STEM fields and in general as well? So
I think that I would like to encourage anybody who, you know, is queer and wants to go into the STEM field to absolutely do it. To not let any, you know, to not let the homophobes and like the transphobes to dissuade you, because there are a lot of really supportive mentors in science, and sometimes it takes a lot of work to find them, but they are there. It's it's just don't give up on your dream just because somebody else is being an asshole. And you know, it could be like a whole bunch of people being an asshole. And I think one of the most important things to do is to really carve out a space for yourself and to say that, you know, and also to not settle and to be like, oh, well, I'm going to be in this lab and it's good for my career, but they treat me like total garbage. So I'm just going to put up with that because it's my career. I think you deserve, like, to anybody who's out there who's thinking that, you deserve better, and you deserve a better lab to go and, you know, to find a new mentor. And it's totally okay to like switch mentors. You know, nobody's gonna like, you know, I think a lot of people, like, you can get a really terrible, like supervisor or professor who is like, I'm gonna sabotage your career if you, you know, leave or go somewhere else. Like, you know, you have a lot more power over your own career than I think some people will let you think. So I think, you know, just to do, like, chase whatever dream you have, make it your own, and, you know, kick the haters out of your life, too. I think that's also a really important thing, is to remove the negative people from your life. So, you know, for myself, I've had to take a lot of steps to remove a lot of people from my life, because it was, like, if you don't have a lot of supportive people in your life, it can really drastically affect everything else. And especially for, you know, if you're, you know, if you're queer, you have a risk of being, harassed, and you have a really big risk of being discriminated against. So making sure that you do have like support system and having a lot of people in your life who are rooting for you is so, so, so important. Because, you know, it's, you know, if you have a bad day at work and you come home and you have somebody to, you know, to support you and lift you up and even, you know, turn it into jokes that like, oh, that person's such a jerk. And, you know, like to make you feel better. Like that's so important to have, because nothing's worse than having a terrible day at work and then coming home and having somebody berate you even more. So definitely don't let those people into your life. And if they are in your life, then I highly encourage you to, you know, to distance yourself from them, even if it's really hard and if it really takes a long time, it's worth it in the end.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's really like, it's one of the biggest fear where people do not want to change mentors. Like it's very scary to actually go for another supervisor once you are already under one. And I think like, it's important to realize that like a safe space is always a safe space. Like it's really hard to work in an environment where you can't work. So yeah, I think, thanks. Yeah, I mean, that's a really good advice for the audience.
Yeah. I'm really excited for like all the queer folk out there to listen to this advice, because it's really great advice. And I feel like a lot of times there's this feeling of hopelessness, you know, you don't know if there's a way out of this. And I think this would really help them. So thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. And I also want to encourage anybody, if they have questions, to reach out to me. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm here to support like anybody and to answer any questions for anybody who's curious about anything, you know. And yeah, I hope I was helpful, I guess.
Definitely, yes. I love your advice. It's very close to my heart.
Yay.
It's really a nice hearing your experience in the field, and just like nice talking to you, honestly. It's like such a nice person to talk to. Okay. Thank you for joining us in this episode.
Thank you everyone for joining us on this episode of Celestia On Air, Deciphering STEM. We look forward to seeing you in the next one.